I look high, I look low, I'm looking everywhere I go, looking for a home in the heart of... To hell with such wages, we've been robbed long enough, it's time to strike.
That's Elise Freeman, curator at the Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm. She's quoting Aurora iron miner Joe Greeny, who summed up the feelings of over 10,000 miners who went on a violent and bloody strike against the Oliver Mining Company and U.S. Steel a century ago. That strike is the subject of a new temporary exhibit that just opened up at the center, and it's titled Enough, the 1916 Mesabi Range Strike. I recently walked through the exhibit with Elise to learn more about the strike and the exhibit itself. Now, the obvious first question was, what was the strike all about?
Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line.
Working conditions were not the best. Another big thing with them was the contract wage system. What that did is miners were only paid for the amount that they mined, the ore that they actually pulled, which in theory might sound fine because you whatever work you put into it, that's what you get paid. However, mining captains would really abuse this system. They would take bribes. There's even a record of, hey, let me spend some time with your wife. If you did that, you got put in soft ore, which meant you could mine a lot quicker, mine a lot more. If you were sympathetic to unions, if you were a radical Finn, and there were plenty of them, chances are you got put on the hard spot and you weren't paid a lot. The other thing is that miners had to pay for all of their equipment. And if you were in underground mining, you had to do all of your timbering. That you weren't paid for. So a lot of bad conditions. The other thing is cost of living up here was more expensive than it was in the Twin Cities.
Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line.
So once the strike was on, they marched across the entire range. So mine to mine, town to town, asking people to join them in the strike. And at the end of it, about 10,000 miners joined to go on strike against the mining companies. So obviously a lot of them were immigrants. They didn't speak a lot of English, and most of them weren't citizens yet. The other thing is that in 1907, the range also had another really big strike. And after that strike ultimately failed, 7 out of 10 Finns were blacklisted from the mines. And one of the ways that they broke the strike was they imported strike breakers from Eastern Europe. I mean, that broke the strike. In the 9 years since then, those strike breakers realized, hey, this is actually really bad. We're going to go on strike now. They were really the leaders of that, where the Finns were more the leaders in the 1907.
Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line.
At that point, there wasn't a union up here. They needed help because you need organizers to really help drive the strike. And at that point, the American Federation of Labor was not interested in poor, immigrant, unskilled workers. So the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, or also known as the Wobblies, and so they arrived on the scene and really started the main push.
While the miners were getting organized, the mining companies were getting prepared as well.
You have this tension building because the mining companies immediately deputized 1,000 guards. And so they basically had a small army armed with Winchester rifles. And then we also have this sign that was posted outside of Oliver Mines that says, any striker who steps on mining company property does so at the risk of his life. So the first skirmish of the strike happened on June 21st in North Hibbing. And there was a parade on the 21st. They're marching down, and this guy named George King was a special deputy or detective of the Duluth, Mesabi, and Northern Railroad, which is also owned by U.S. Steel, who also owns Oliver, which is the big mining company. So, you know, they're all connected. And so he's in a car, gets out, kind of disrupts the parade a little bit. So the miners, the strikers had a, where they would carry the American flag first, and then at the end of the procession, they had a red flag. And that was meant as a solidarity symbol, where red is the color of the blood of all workers. Well, George King didn't really like that. So he goes up, he grabs the flag, basically a skirmish breaks out, someone tries punching him, a knife's drawn, he takes out a gun, the gun's hit away, he gets cut, but he gets away with the flag. Well, in our collection, we actually have this flag in the case, is the actual real flag. And what's interesting is it's just a sheet of red cloth, but I mean, because it shows the, they really just utilized whatever they had. So it's a piece almost, like it feels like a sheet material, but that symbolized so much to them. You can kind of see these dark spots where, knowing the history of the flag, it's probably blood. In the newspapers, especially the English-speaking newspapers, because that's even another whole story to this, is press. And all of the English newspapers were pretty much on the side of the mining company. You know, these guys are all crying about nothing. Yep. They're agitators, just they should get back to work. And so in the newspapers, you had George King being hailed as this patriotic hero, this amazing police officer, which he wasn't even a police officer, but this amazing officer who, you know, stood up to anarchy.
There were more and bloodier events to come. You're listening to Close to Home, and I'm visiting with Elise Freeman, the curator at the Minnesota Discovery Center, and we're talking about her new exhibit on the 1916 Mesabi Iron Range strike.
Yes, we went down on the picket line to keep the scabs out of the mine. Who's going to win the strike? Come on, and we'll show you the way.
The next morning at 5:30 a.m. in North Virginia, you have about 100 strikers lining up because it's towards the road to the Alpena mine. And they are there to basically stop people from going to work. Well, then 20 to 30 mining deputies converge on those strikers and say, hey, get out of here. You can't be here. No one really knows who did something first. But when you have that many people with really huge tensions, all that kind of stuff, something's going to go down. So basically, bricks are being thrown, rocks, the police automatically take out their clubs. Huge fight. Actually, this woman who was in a neighboring house comes out onto her porch. She comes out with this shotgun and just starts blasting away, really at nothing. So this is going on for just, I mean, it's not very long. And then this guy named John Oller comes out of his house. And he's, it looks like he's coming towards someone with a rifle, because he's holding a rifle. Yep. It's later revealed that he has a revolver in his pocket, but he's walking, and he's telling people, get out of the way, get out of the way. Well, then it's like a split second, and he goes down. He gets shot three times, dead on the ground. He's basically the first casualty of this strike. I mean, newspapers blow up.
And that event sparked more violence and bloodshed across the range. The strike and the violence would continue until September, when, with winter coming, the strikers would eventually give in.
We went out one morning before daylight, and I was sure we'd have a fight, but the scabs was cowardly, ran away, but we went back the very next day. Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line.
I asked Elise to tell me a little more about some of the major themes of the exhibit.
One of the big ones that we wanted to cover a little bit in the intro, like I had mentioned, was the really bad working conditions. It wasn't until 1905 that they actually started recording deaths and injuries. And the first year, it was about 100 deaths and 50 non-fatal injuries. Back then, people were dying pretty a lot. The other thing is that there was that giant power imbalance between U.S. Steel, which was the world's first billion-dollar corporation, and then all of these immigrant miners who couldn't speak English. Just the violence aspect of it. That, you know, today you don't really see these violent strikes anymore. This wasn't an easy time for anyone. Really, though, there are a lot of sub-themes, you know, when you get into anti-immigration stances, you get into even workers' rights, you get into labor, you get into police brutality versus just riots in general. All of that that happened 100 years ago is still so relevant to what's going on today. One of the quotes, and I mean, this is describing people's grandparents up here today, or great-grandparents, that says if those foreigners don't like it here, they can go back to their own country. I mean, it's almost like it's taken from a newspaper today, where, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, you should reflect a little bit on history and what's going on and all of that as well. Our main focus is to always tell local stories, and this is a perfect local historical piece. Because, like I said, it's not covered in textbooks, so we really like to focus on that bottom-up history and tell the history of the people that actually lived here, not, you know, that top-down approach. So
there's a lot more to the exhibit and the story of the 1916 strike than I have time to tell here. Between my talk with Elise and wandering the exhibit on my own, I spent several hours engrossed in a story that I'd known very little about. Now, in addition to the exhibit, they've created a guide so that you can visit some of the locations that are featured prominently in the story. The temporary exhibit can be seen at the Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm now through July. For Northern Community Radio, I'm Grant Frazier, and this is Close to Home.
Who's going to win the fight? Come on, and we'll show you the way. We all went out on the railroad track to meet them scabs and turn them back. We win that strike, I'm glad to say. Come on and we'll show you the way.